This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us in studio today are Lieutenant Governor Josh Green, who during his campaign pledged to own homelessness. Sam Millington is the new executive director of Partners in Care, the coalition spearheading the Point in Time Count. And participating by phone, Scott Murashige, who is the governor's coordinator on homelessness since 2015. He's worked with many of the service providers prior to being tapped to help lead the way. And Brandy Menino is with Hope Services Hawaii, an affiliate nonprofit organization of the Catholic Church, which helped the Big Island community deal with hundreds of families who found themselves homeless overnight because of the lava flow. Welcome to you all.
Welcome. Thanks a lot, Catherine.
Thank you.
Now, Lieutenant Governor Green, let's start out with you, because you've got the responsibility as part of the executive branch now to change things, not just putting pressure on the administration as you had as a legislator.
Yes, it's an honor to have that role. I absolutely love working with the governor's team. I just actually spent the last hour and a half with Scott, who's a fantastic piece of the gov's top team. And on homelessness, it's a huge crisis, we all know. They've had 2 years of very good success because of the foundational work that's been done by Scott, Brandy, Partners in Care, the city. Lots has been done, incredible amounts been done, and we all know that there's much more to do. So to wrap the whole problem in the arms of the administration, to go at this as our top priority or one of our top two priorities in the state is critical. That's what I was saying all along for this last year as we campaigned. And the synergies are amazing. Because we've seen decreases in the homeless population, we can celebrate a lot of people being helped. But we also know that this challenge is multifactorial. Sometimes the chronic homeless population has more problems, even though we've gotten some people off the street. These are the kind of groups that we're working with and what our experts at this discussion will be able to share with you. I, as a physician, do look at the chronic homeless challenge with the addiction problem and the behavioral health problem a lot like Sam does with his large partners and Brandy does. But we all, as a team, are hell-bent on making sure that Hawaii moves very firmly and aggressively towards decreasing homelessness, not just in the shadows, but so that everyone can feel that we've helped a lot of people, decreased the suffering, decreased the cost, which can be prohibitive, and have put something in sustainable. And that's why Scott has been so extraordinary and Mark Alexander, too.
And we've got this point in time count coming up on Tuesday. Can you just give us a snapshot of where we're at? Because our listeners are hearing, the point in time count is actually over a shorter period this year.
Well, it's going to start Tuesday night. The big push is that first night. It's 3 days then afterwards. In the past, it's been up to 5 days. But we've really reformulated the methodology and what we're trying to do and make it more efficient. So longer doesn't mean better. So we have better training. We have a training video for a train the trainer video that Queen Liliuokalani Trust helped us with. We've reordered the questions so that there's a more logical flow. Working together with Brandy and Bridging the Gap, which is the neighbor island equivalent of Partners in Care, we've added some new questions around natural disasters, which obviously affects a Big Island, but also here on Oahu we've had the flooding. And then we're also asking an additional question about youth. So the shorter time frame, the better training, the better logical flow of the questions, I think is going to allow us methodologically to have a more pure process and a way to get more information. And it's important. This is not just a snapshot tally of homeless. We're trying to gain an understanding of the experience of being homelessness so that policymakers can be informed, funders can be informed, and the service providers can have a better idea of how to provide services where the gaps are, you know, whether it be vets, whether it be the transgender community, Native Hawaiians, families, children. So this survey, it's not, the amount of days isn't what's important. What's important is the integrity of the data we generate.
You may get some, though, who think that, well, by doing it over a shorter period, your data won't be as good, and It may just reflect a decrease when maybe there isn't a decrease.
Well, two things I'd say to that. One is we have over 700 volunteers. Now, not just for the survey. They're going to be helping with data entry. And if you came to our office yesterday, it was like Santa's elves on steroids. We have over 800 hygiene kits going out. We have over 1,000 gift cards, $5 gift cards going out. So, but having this number of volunteers is going to help us get to places where we need to go. And having the volunteers in the different regions who know their territory, they can help us navigate better. The other piece that I think is important to add is that the data we generate is not going to be limited by the amount of time simply because there are enough people to cover that territory. So the longer you stay out there, also, you know, the less effective you start to be because the people who don't want to be contacted are just going to retreat further into the, you know, into the bushes or the beaches. We have the areas covered. That's not an issue. And the final point is this is just a snapshot count. This isn't the be and end all of the data. And Scott can talk more about this as well. There's lots of pieces of data that we use to determine the trending of homelessness going up or down.
Okay. And Scott, why don't you chime in here? The trend from last year was that homelessness or the number of people that they counted was actually down.
Yes, and, you know, for the past several years, both Bridging the Gap and Partners in Care has used, you know, the same general methodology for the point-in-time count. So we know we can look at the trending over time as being somewhat reliable just to show a trend. And I think one key thing to point out is in Hawaii, our rates of homelessness are trending in a positive direction. They're going down, while in other parts of the country, they're seeing the opposite trend. Actually, this year, Hawaii had the fourth largest numeric decrease in our homeless population, according to point-in-time count, behind the states of California, Florida, and Michigan, and I think that's significant. But again, like Sam said, the point-in-time count is not the only set of data that we look at. When we look at data from our homeless management information system, and particularly we look at rates of exit to permanent housing over the past 2 years, we've seen those numbers have gone up significantly. In, you know, 2 years ago, only about a third of individuals in homeless programs were exiting to permanent housing. Now, after the Department of Human Services has been working closely with our providers to implement new performance metrics, we've seen the rate of exit to permanent housing go up to now over half, over 51% of individuals in our homeless programs are exiting to permanent housing placements. And that's what we want to see is more people going into housing. We're also seeing over time the length of time that someone's enrolled in a homeless program has gone down from a year to about half a year. So we're moving more people into permanent housing and we're moving them more quickly. And I think that's one of the things that we really want to see.
So you're not too concerned if people say, well, we won't be able to compare our data with what was gleaned in the previous years?
Well, I think, again, the point-in-time count is just one indicator. You know, the state actually and the counties are not in charge of the point-in-time count. It's our continuum of care, Partners in Care and Bridging the Gap, that directly administer the count. These are the providers who know their community. They know their community best. So I defer to Sam and Brandy about the specific method and how the count is taking place. But I think, you know, we have a variety of data sets that we're looking at to evaluate progress. It's not just a point-in-time count. And when we look at all of the various data sets, we see, you know, we're moving in the right direction. I think that's what we want to continue to remain focused on.
And, Brandy, what can you share? Because you have experience with Bridging the Gap, and, you know, that includes the continuum of care on not just the Big Island, but Kauai and Maui.
So we actually are utilizing additional days. We're covering, especially with the Big Island, we advocated to continue to have over 5 days the count. So we're counting from January 23rd to the 28th. We don't have the 700 volunteers that Oahu has. We've been heavily relying on our community partners, our continued care partners, the faith community that has already been working with the clients that are on the streets, as well as people that already are known to those experiencing homelessness. So we're taking a slightly different approach in that sense, but we definitely, especially on the Big Island, needed the entire 5 days to be able to reach all the areas that are known to us in our community of where people are experiencing homelessness. We're getting more on a rural aspect. There's just, you know, they're in the sticks, they're on lava fields, they're in the bushes and the mountains, as well as the beaches and their cars. So we really wanted to just make sure we had that time available to our the teams that are leading each of the areas on the Big Island, as well as Maui and Kauai.
Right, you've got a larger area to cover.
Right. And I wanted to point out what Sam was saying. Like, we really, when people tend to ask me, or what is it going to look like in our homeless planning time count? You think we're going to see some decreases? I hesitate in saying yes, so I'm kind of skeptical because of the impact of the disasters that has happened in our communities. So that's why the extra questions in our survey, the specific questions we're asking is your homelessness a result of Hurricane Lane? Yes or no. Is your homelessness a result of the lava, earthquake, air quality? Yes or no. So we're hoping that we're able to capture that and maybe tell that story. If we do experience our numbers increasing, then we'd be able to share, like, what was that impact and, you know, that direct impact when we're doing the surveys. We reached out to Partners in Care to also ask that question, because we intentionally actually helped people move off our island to other islands. When if they had a family member on Oahu or a friend that could take them in, our partner, Child and Family Service, did have a grant, a $50,000 grant from First Hawaiian Bank, who helped pay for airfare. So we really was intentional and say, hey, you guys should probably ask this question too, to see if they're if they fell out of that situation. Maybe they were able to stay with family, but it's possible that they had a falling out and no longer staying there. So just as a just in case, ask the question as well.
And the second question that you folks have added surrounds the experience of our youth, right, of Keiki. How long have they been homeless? Yeah. What's exactly the snapshot on the neighbor islands as far as children who have been homeless for a long time?
So our youth question, our youth data is actually not that great. I think we counted like 8. I mean, it was a really small number. So that's a really challenge in identifying unaccompanied youth in our communities on all three islands. And so I think most of the youth that we're able to connect with or to survey is with families, connected to the families. The families are experiencing homelessness. The unaccompanied youth is a much more difficult population to identify.
Okay, and Lieutenant Governor, what's your sense as far as our youth and you know, being out on the streets?
Why, it is difficult on the neighbor islands to capture youth. Even when I'm working in the ER, I've seen that over the years. It's very difficult to get people and see if they're young, that they're part of this great challenge. It's a little easier to calculate on Oahu, where we know we have a crisis of youth. And what I was going to add, listening to these very good partners, is that the data is dynamic in several different ways. Like Scott was saying, the point and count gives you one piece of data. Other pieces of data that are more specific to the youth will be very valuable. For instance, the governor chose to invest some of the Ohana Zone resources into the youth shelter and that facility. So each piece of information that we get it for different reasons. It was mentioned during the first round of discussion here that Scott made a very good point that moving people at a 50% rate into permanent supportive housing was a fantastic improvement. And now that's informed policy. So the Department of Human Services went out, took our idea and ran with it and got that waiver, that 1115 waiver, so that they can start using monies from Medicaid to provide supporting services to get people into permanent housing. So maybe we can increase that rate to 60 or 70% of those who engage with the system, because that's the ultimate goal, as it's been very well explained. Getting permanent housing for people, getting everybody over time, each at their own rate, into that space is the goal. So that's why it's so important to have this survey, the point in time count, to continue to get the data from hospitals and the many partners and Partners in Care and in Brandy's organization. So when you get all that data together, then you can make sensible, real policy decisions, because there's that piece of it, and then there's putting out the fires, right? And we'll be doing both, but the big picture, we want to have a good coordinated strategy for the whole state so that when crises arise, whether they're in Waianae or in Kakaako or wherever, we can then apply extra focus and say, okay, how do we solve this acute problem and how do we fit it into the long-term solution?
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about homelessness and we'd like to know what you're seeing in your neighborhood. What's working? What's not? You can join the discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. You brought up the issue of Ohana zones. Scott, maybe you can give us a snapshot on where we're at with that.
So the governor announced in December that we've allocated over half of the available $30 million for Ohana Zone funding for projects in partnership with the city and county of Honolulu. We're opening up three different permanent supportive housing sites, a total of 60 units for the most chronically homeless individuals on Oahu. We're also allocating some funding to the RISE youth shelter on the Windward side because we know, unaccompanied youth, that's a growing population of homeless individuals that we need to double down on. We're also working with Catholic Charities to open up a new assessment center on the Leeward Coast to serve the growing number of homeless individuals on that side of the island. Last year in the point in time count, we saw the numbers of individuals on the Leeward Coast go up, so we want to make sure we're directing resources to meet that need. On the neighbor islands, we partnered with Hawaii County to look at converting some units at one of their facilities in West Hawaii to permanent supportive housing for families, working with, Bridging the Gap to get some input about what the needs are there. And the remaining balance of funds, we're in ongoing discussion with the counties, particularly the counties of Maui and Kauai, where we know we have incoming administrations. And we want to work with the counties and the providers in the community because they know their communities best. And we want to work with them to really match the funding to meet the need on the ground where they're at.
There was some criticism that we aren't spending the money fast enough.
Well, I think one of the things that the governor is really committed to is using the funding in an efficient manner so that we're able to bring up more Ohana zones, more programs to meet the need than the minimum that the law required. Act 209 that appropriated Ohana zone funds really appropriated a lump sum to the governor's office and required that we have a minimum of three sites on Oahu and one each on neighbor islands. So we want to stretch that as far as we can. So we've exceeded the three projects on Oahu. We're opening up more projects than that, where our goal is to try and get more projects in place with the counties. And again, we want to make sure that we're targeting funding to meet the needs in the communities. There's also been a number of challenges in terms of the Ohana Zone funds that you can only utilize Ohana Zone funds for state or county lands. So finding the right piece of property that can support a project has been challenging, but we're working through it and we're getting the money out. And again, our goal, we're on track to exceed the minimum number of sites that the law requires us to. So I think we're trying to use the money as well as possible to meet the need that we clearly see in the community.
Okay, we do have a call coming in from Waianae. Robin, you have a question?
Yes, I do. I actually have a comment, and maybe it can be clarified. I've heard a lot of disparity about the houseless population declining in Honolulu. In Waianae, the consensus is that our homeless population is growing. And among the community members, there's been a concern that possibly houseless individuals are being transferred to more rural communities. And the inequity in that is quite disturbing. My other question is when we had a city representative at neighborhood boards, we asked specifically about data. And it's interesting to me that there's so much data regarded in your programming, but our city representative told us that they really don't have hard data to find out who's remaining in a transitory housing. They can't keep that kind of data. So can you clarify how that could be? In one community, we have no data yet, and the houseless population is declining in Honolulu, but it's going up on the West Coast.
Thank you for that. I'm actually looking at something that I pulled off of the Oahu Point in Time Count map, and it actually shows, I think, that there was an increase of 63 people on the Waianae Coast, Eva, 19, East Honolulu, two dozen more people, and the other districts on Oahu showed a decrease. So I don't know. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, Scott may be better positioned to talk because I'm new. I just started a month ago, so I'm not as familiar with what happened last year. But I think the general point is, it's not a uniform trend across the island. And I think Scott mentioned this earlier. So we are identifying more in Leeward Coast, for example. We don't know what's going to happen this time. We have some wonderful organizers out there. So we're really optimistic about getting good data on the Leeward Coast, but I'm going to defer to Scott to answer that a little bit more in detail.
So thanks, Sam. So, you know, one of the things I know that had come out in the community and the Leeward Coast that people had concern about was whether city and county officials are transporting homeless individuals from downtown Honolulu to the Leeward side. Because I think there had been news coverage about HPD and the city offering transportation for people to go to shelter. It is true that transportation is provided for some individuals to the Waianae Civic Center, which is on the Leeward side, but that primarily happens when an individual chooses that shelter as a place where they want to go. And oftentimes it's because they're originally from the Leeward Coast, they have a connection to the community, they have friends or family in that area, a community support system there. So I don't believe it's true that the city and county or others are taking individuals from urban Honolulu and just simply dropping them off on the Leeward side.
Okay.
In terms of data, I think part of what contributed to the decrease in certain parts of Oahu last year is that we had production of new low-income housing specifically for homeless individuals and families. The Kahoiki Village, which opened up just off of Nimitz Highway, added new units for over 120 individuals to immediately move off the streets into housing prior to the point in time count, which I think helped to bring the number of people down. I've actually gone out with outreach providers on the Leeward Coast into the encampments. Many of the individuals there are individuals who are from, born and raised on the Leeward side, where friends or family, a support system in that community. We're trying to employ the same strategies to target moving those individuals in permanent homes, working with outreach, using non-traditional partners such as law enforcement or our healthcare partners to engage people if they have established relationships, and also continuing to link them with Housing First programs, the programs that we know work that are getting people into permanent homes. In regards to the data, we have a lot of data to inform how things are being tracked. I can't speak for the city and county official, but I think it might be in regard to the specific question that was asked. I think, my office, we try to be as transparent to the public as possible. If people have questions for us, you can reach us at 586-0193 or by email gov.homelessness@hawaii.gov. Or we can also, connect you to partners and care or other people who may be able to track down that data that you have questions about.
You did bring up that village there, and, it needs to be said that there has been a lot of good that has come over the past several years, trying different things. The city did the Halemaliola over at Sand Island, the Navigation Center. Everybody's trying something different. You've got those igloo-type things that are happening here on Oahu on the windward side. You've got different things that are being tried over on Waianae at the Pu'uhonua Refuge Center over there. So folks are trying to figure out what works for this community, and what can we use as a model going forward?
And it's clear that the point you make is the right one. One size doesn't fit all, and we're all in this together. So speaking to the question of where the numbers go up or down, the truth is it's totally dynamic at all times, but the goal is to get an individual into a space that's most appropriate for them, whether it's reconnecting them to family or in the place that they have roots, okay? So that's one reason why sometimes a homeless cluster of individuals will go from one place to another. Another thing is when a really good idea comes up, like the hygiene center that Councilman Manahan and the council and the mayor came up with lots of friends, that the police have embraced the reality that sometimes where services prop up and are really necessary, it might even draw some attention. And And we just all realize that can create some extra work, but we have to be understanding and provide the right resources. So it's a really, really dynamic situation. But an important point is that we have to have our coordinated team, which is the four of us who are talking, of course, the governor at the top of the heap, and the many people across the state that can deliver these services, all generally knowing what our capacity is and the scope of the problem. Because each individual's community will tell us that they want this or that service. Otherwise, it doesn't work, right? Because we don't want anyone rejecting our hard work and our efforts. And at the same time, resources are, at the end of the day, ultimately finite in some way. So the grants that we apply for, or the Ohana zones that we can utilize, or the actual building of housing has to be strategic. And I think that's why we just came out of a meeting with 17 of the state's leaders. Scott and I were running it with police, with city, OHA, ACLU, just leadership from all over. We get through this. We had a meeting yesterday with the PIC team, phenomenal, and the clergy. So everyone is really moving in the same direction, but there will be little bumps along the way because it's a very dynamic problem for the whole country.
Okay.
And then adding to that, you know, we know what works. So it's finding that balance between what do we pilot, the new things that come out, and but we also know what works. And so with the legislature, we're hoping that, you know, programs that like outreach, rapid rehousing, Housing First, the Family Assistance Center, the LEAD program, this really cool program with the law enforcement diversion program, coordinated statewide homelessness initiative. We're hoping the base budget funding can be increased because we know those work. So $13.5 million last year attached to the Ohana Zone project as a wraparound. We know that works. If we can invest more money, we'll be in a better position because homelessness is a 50-year-old growing metastasizing problem here in Hawaii and across the nation. So, you know, to take Dr. Green, you know, one dose for a cancer doesn't do the trick.
Right.
So if we can have sustained, steady funding over a long period of time, we're going to make a big difference.
That's why keeping the eye on the prize, which I think people have mentioned, sustainable housing, Housing First, is really the end goal. All the things we're doing now is kind of like getting the field ready for that. And in some cases, these mitigating responses like the igloos, quote unquote, you're going to see discussions about in the next weeks and months, which Scott will tell you is a very complicated thing. The essentially this concept of mobile access to Ohana zones or lift zones, that's another thing which will help. We're trying to bring some support as we move people with a lot more coordination towards permanent housing.
Okay, we have a number of calls. Brian from Kona, you still on the line?
Okay, took your speakerphone as instructed. Thank you for taking my phone call. I just want to say that when I was working at Ken's House of Pancakes on the Big Island for 3.5 years with Josh Zanti, I was homeless most of that time, and I got missed in the point of time surveys. And I'm not saying this is the rule. In general, I'm sure that you get a majority of the homeless people statewide through the efforts of many, you know, good, well-intentioned people. But what I'm saying and suggesting is that we shouldn't get too optimistic about trends, because I know for a fact that these point-in-time surveys miss people. Over the 20 years that I've been homeless, I've only been actually counted once. So go ahead, carry on. I'm going to hang up now.
Okay, thank you. It's a good point. You know, there is that whole segment of the hidden homeless. I know on my street, and I'd say in the last maybe 3 months, I've seen people sleeping in their cars.
Yes, and I said I've said that to the gang, and we're all aware that, like I said earlier, it's a piece of data. We might, as we see the trends, always know that some percentage of people can't get counted, but it does give us a way to know, first, like Scott said, if we're moving in the right direction. We also get a lot of personal vignettes. It shouldn't be overlooked that we have lots of other programs. For instance, we've got the coordinated entry system, which takes in an incredible amount of individual-to-individual data. So no two people are alike in any way, and no two homeless individuals are suffering the same way. Like the gentleman we just heard of, works with my auntie, Joanne, so he has a job. He has a life that is working on many levels, but still might want or need certain other assistance. Whereas a gentleman that I met on the street who had a very serious drug problem needed a different level of assistance and wasn't working. So we look at the point in time count. We look at the data from Partners in Care. We look at the data from Bridging the Gap, and we go to hospitals and ERs and clinics, and we get more data there, and churches. So we put together the snapshot, but also paint a whole tapestry of what it looks like this year so that we can adjust the grand plan.
Now, Brandy, I know we had talked last year when the volcano was happening, and I think at the time there was a request to bring that mobile hygiene van over from Honolulu to the Big Island because there was a great need there.
Yeah, for sure. We reached out to Annie, the executive director of Project Vision. They just launched their Hiehie trailer, I think, back in March. And that was the first one of my first partners I reached out to. This was in May when a community member had a vision to build micro shelters in our community. We knew that the construction of the units was quick. We could do that quickly, but the infrastructure to do the showers and the bathrooms was going to take another 30 days. And so I really pleaded with Annie, really was, "Hey, Annie, I hear you have showers and toilets on a trailer. You think you could bring it?" You know, so she was definitely supportive of that, got her board to support it, was able to get sponsorship to bring her trailer over for a month. And while it was here, we were able to advertise the use of the trailer and how it could be useful in our community, not only for future disasters, but while there isn't any disaster, it could be utilized also for homeless services. So since then, Project Vision has purchased another Hiehie trailer, and it's on island. She launched it, I think, in November of 2018.
And I know that's probably the effort that you folks are talking about, that, you know, you have the flexibility where there's a need, you can maybe shift things around to be able to meet that need in whatever community is stressed at the moment. We do have a call from Mountain View, Francis. What's your comment?
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I was explaining to the person who answered the phone about I've been here since the 70s in Mountain View, multiple properties. I thought it was going to be my retirement and all that. Well, it didn't work quite out that way with health problems, but that's not the issue. The issue was we built several like little Ohana shacks like on the properties, and as people graduated from high school, they could not find jobs, and that seems to be still the problem. I don't know, because of the school, that they don't have skills necessary, another being a cashier at McDonald's or what, I don't know, but you know, we've tried to help them, and I'm old man on fixed income. I can't, you know, there's only so many yards you can do, you know, so this is the problem, and we seem to be growing this, generation of folks that can't get good work, or there's no programs available, and they're homeless because there's only so many houses available.
Thank you for that. That's a good point. You know, and I'm sure it varies from island to island with that particular situation. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We're talking about the homeless problem, and you can join the discussion, too, by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
She's been called the new face of Hawaiian music. Asia Gamble is one of the few Wahine Kiho Alu, women slack key artists, on the circuit today. On January 26th, she makes her first appearance in HPR's Atherton Studio with an evening of traditional songs and new mele. To reserve your seats, call the station during business hours or visit hprtickets.org. Sponsored by Bonnie Rice and the Rice Partnership Wealth Management.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to St. Andrew's Schools, which includes the Priory School for Girls, the Prep for Boys, and Queen Emma Preschool.
If you're just joining us today, our guests are Lieutenant Governor Josh Green, Scott Morishige, the governor's coordinator on homelessness, and Sam Millington of Partners in Care, and Brandy Menino with Hope Services Hawaii. We do have a number of calls. Chris from Salt Lake, do you have a question?
I do. Good morning. You know, with great compassion for, like, the kapuna and the families have been priced out of paradise, they're not really who I'm calling about. But it seems to me that there's a lot of people who have drug and alcohol and mental illness problems who are just allowed to wander around freely in our public spaces. And, you know, they tend to make things unsafe or uncomfortable for those of us who can't afford to have big private estates or, you know, governor's mansions or whatever as the case may be. I mean, this morning I was sitting at Salt Lake Shopping Center drinking a cup of coffee, minding my business, and I was verbally assaulted by a very large homeless man who had gotten it in his mind that I was following him around. You know, luckily I was able to defuse the situation, but I mean, for a moment there, I thought he was going to attack me. And it seems like these people should really be put someplace until they can either overcome their problems or until, you know, the situation's resolved for good. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Critically smart and important comment. So we've been talking about this today and every day, but the nexus between chronic mental illness and addiction is profound with homelessness. And so the gentleman's observation is right. We believe that about 1,500 individuals in our state are somewhere near that state. Those are individuals that are chronically homeless, homeless for a long time, and are the ones that drifted into that gentleman's life today. On a spectrum. Some are not so bad, some are really bad and having a lot of trouble. Here are the challenges. Right now, our Hawaii State Hospital, as we build out a whole new capacity, another 160 beds, right now being built, is completely full. Our state hospital right now is completely full with people who have been sent there by the courts for violence and basically methamphetamine addiction. That's why we had to expand that. So the community, I'm sure, will be somewhat patient, but we're all worried about whether that encounter today turned from something very innocuous to, God forbid, a violent act. So these kind of things happen if people have severely troubled states. So that's why that's number one. We have to put in essentially all of that extra capacity at the mental health level. We were talking today that if we could get 100 beds, just 100 beds across the state, which I'm working on, I'll be in constant conversations with our hospitals, especially our state hospitals, the HHSC system, Hawaii Health Systems Corporation, to get some extra capacity for about 100 of the most troubled individuals. That would give people the real experience of a great decrease in our homeless challenge. Meanwhile, we deal with all of these large systemic challenges just based on poverty. So that's a huge issue. We also can offer, through a community treatment law that we passed, though it has to be improved because it's not working yet very well, while honoring people's civil rights, we have to also be able to make sure that they have access to real health care. Because as a doc, I can tell you, long-acting antipsychotic medications, these are injections, that medicine will stay in people's systems for 4 to 6 weeks. Dr. Koyunagi, great expert, phenomenal human being. If we can expand that capacity, it really changes the lives for the better of a lot of people and families. But people have to choose when they take medication, unless they're a danger to themselves or others. So that's another major piece. But I'll caution every listener out there, because drugs are different now. Used to be just Pakalolo and alcohol back 50 years ago for our parents and grandparents, could be dealt with in the community. Now when you're dealing with methamphetamine and heroin, that's why the opioid issue is such a big deal, it punches holes in the brain. A lot of people will never come back from that very well. So we are in a new era, and we will have to have some people get permanent supportive care at facilities. Other people will respond to the long-acting drugs, God willing, and then a lot of drug prevention, drug treatment is going to be necessary. So that part of the problem is not going to go away, but it has to be dealt with because it drives the cost very significantly and it drives danger somewhat significantly.
I know. I was in Chinatown, and I was really kind of shocked. I saw a woman squatting down, looking down at the crosswalk, and I couldn't figure out what she was doing. We were stopped at the light, and she had a big plastic bottle. And then she threw it in the crosswalk right as two people on mopeds were driving on King Street. And I just kind of gasped thinking, oh, my gosh, they have no idea what just happened here. You know, she missed and they were fine. But then she darted out in the crosswalk, to retrieve the bottle again. So not only a threat to herself, but a danger to others as well.
Well, this is why the average lifespan of individuals who are homeless or chronically homeless is 51 rather than 80 for the general population at large, because they're very susceptible to accidents, to infections that come out, and it does bleed over into the rest of society. So one of our tasks is to, like we talked about, the long-term goals, which are very well established, some of the short-term goals of doing harm reduction, starting facilities like the mayor and the council did over in Cooley, and then they're going to build on that. You've heard me talk a little bit about this H4 concept, which just means adding some health care to the hygiene and then medical respite and permanent housing above it, because you can then take that very woman and give her a chance to get care any day of the week, not at the hospital at high cost. Maybe you can mitigate the fact that she rolls that bottle into the street. Maybe you can mitigate that she's the victim of violence from somebody else. So that's where people will suddenly see, or they'll think they see, that a gigantic change has happened in homelessness. But really, it was the longstanding work of the Scott Morishigis of the world and the Brandys of the world and the Sams of the world that were year over year over year building a real foundation to deal with homelessness. Both are important.
Okay, we have another call coming in from the Big Island. Cecil, you wanted to share an idea?
Yes, we'd come up with an idea when the lava started flowing over here. We call it EPCON, an experimental prototype community of necessity, after Walt Disney and his Imagineers, the EPCOT, experimental prototype community of tomorrow. As a community of necessity, addressing the homeless issue, we decided that if we could recycle aluminum, steel, and about 5 of the 7 types of plastics that are used in the waste stream, we could then add that to lava and concrete and create an EPCON that would house up to 100 individuals. Now, these individuals are not the mentally ill people that you're talking about. These are, I'm going to estimate, at least 70% or better of the homeless. They can actually do something. They want to do something. They are sincere in their desire to have a place in our society and to have a job. And EPCON provides the 5 basic human needs: food, clothing, shelter, basic health care, and the 5th thing that you must have that's already been addressed today, you must have a job for that person. And that is difficult because these people cannot hold down a normal job. They need to follow the rules that Walt Disney put out. If you live there, you work there. EPCONs must provide all 5 of the basic human needs, or you're wasting your time.
Okay, thank
food,
you very
clothing,
much.
Shelter, healthcare, and a...
Thank you very much, Cecil. Those are good points. Brandy, you want to chime in there? I mean, lots of folks have come up with different ideas to try and help the community, and I think there is that sincere feeling that you do want to help, you know, families out there who are homeless and need shelter for their children, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I know our mayor's office, in response to the lava and taking his idea, they put together a forum and they hosted a housing summit. This is a opportunity for the community to give feedback on considering alternative materials rather than the traditional building. So I know there's a task force called Housing Solutions Task Force that the mayor's office is coordinating. That's really an opportunity when people were giving us those ideas when we were building the micro shelters. We'd certainly refer them to our local county department of planning. That would probably be the first step, is to work with our county planning department. The director is Michael Yee, and because the county would have to approve of, you know, the communal living, the type of materials, the site plan, the floor plan. And that's kind of way beyond my own expertise in housing and building. So that would be the partner I would reach out to.
Okay, and we do have Sherry from Mountain View, who is apparently a refugee from the lava. Do you have a question or a comment?
Well, I've lived here 3.5 years, and I came from Boston, and I think the Boston healthcare for the homeless model that they use should be used on all the islands, because they a lot of what Dr. Green was saying, they do like respite care and housing first and whatnot. The other thing, because I know we have limited time, I really think that social media has a really huge impact. And if you guys, if the advocacy groups were to really clarify who are these homeless people, because there are people that say, oh, they're flying in here one way just to be homeless because it's Hawaii. And then the scapegoating of crime on the homeless is a problem. Yes, they commit crimes, but they're not the only ones. They just get caught easier. And I have a brother who is addicted to opiates and whatnot, and he's over in Boston area. So, yeah, it's very emotional. And also I think that we need to create opportunities for someone who's not a landowner to be able to purchase land or do the tiny house thing, because it's a zoning issue and sanitation issue in order to do the tiny house communities. And if we're going to open up the Lower East Rift Zone for housing again, we cannot have foundation housing, and you will solve a lot of homeless issues that way.
Let's talk about the tiny homes, because there's been lots of discussion about that over many years, and we don't have a lot to show at this point.
That's a first. She brings up great points. I went to Boston and spoke with those people, and they're fantastic. And that's what some of our ideas have directly been developed from, RH4 proposals and others. And we're going to do that. The tiny housing opportunity, that's what Scott was speaking quite eloquently about earlier. The reason for having Ohana zones and the reason for having input from each of the mayors, the new administrations and the old administrations, is meant to do specifically that. If, for instance, the new mayor of Maui were to say, I'd like to, on a piece of state or county land, dedicate that piece of land and ask for a certain amount of resource because they feel that tiny homes is part of the solution, then they can ask, and that would be worked out with Scott, Governor, and the rest of our team, myself included. So we can go to these areas. When we were in Seattle, we saw that some churches did a wonderful job with a parking lot and were able to put tiny houses in. But it's only a small piece of the puzzle because, once again, I'll reiterate, we want to go to sustained, permanent housing. But some people may need a year or two to go through that part of the road. I think you're going to see a lot of that stuff because we now have critical mass of thinking pop up in different areas. And that's the legislature did ask us to be creative, so we will. Also, there's $150 million being asked for from the county at the moment, maybe even $160 million. We're going to wait for the new draft to deal with many different parts of the challenge from the lava. So that may be part of their ask. We're going to see the details. So all of these things are in real time. So I don't want that very nice young woman to leave this conversation and feel dismayed that it's not happening dynamically, because I've been watching what Brandy and Sam and Scott are doing, and it is dynamic, as you can imagine. And the city and county are in full partnership with them. So these smaller solutions will take care of a piece of homelessness. Meanwhile, we will go aggressively down the road of permanent housing with lots of units. That's the goal.
Okay, and I know we've only got a couple of minutes left, but anything else you want to add, underscore?
I'd like to unpack a couple things, both Mountain Views. One is the economics, the jobs. I mean, that's bottom line foundational across the country. Zillow has just done some studies in three major cities showing homelessness is rising. And we know that the gap between the rich and the poor is growing. We know we've had some tax policies come out of Washington, which are not favorable to the lower middle class and the unemployed. So this is a big challenge. And so that gentleman is correct. Jobs, at the end of the day, are going to play a big role in helping people stay housed. And then the point that the young lady just made about information dissemination, coming into Partners in Care, that's one of the things we want to get better at. We want to be able to get information out there that's helpful, that's accurate. So whether it be data, whether it be addressing stories about people being moved and that aren't correct, or that we know, for example, that homeless individuals actually commit a lower percentage of crimes than the general population. So we want to be able to have all kinds of information portals, right, that tell the story more accurately.
Good data. Good data. We have very little time left, but Scott, Randy, anything else you want to mention?
I know Scott's going to talk, but for the callers from Mountain View also wanted to unpack some of that as well. Perfect timing in her, what she talked about in the healthcare for the homeless. So we don't have a program like that on Hawaii Island. That is something our mayor's office is asking the state legislative session is for a mobile health team. We've had partnerships in our community with the family residency program, our community medicine. We don't have a focused healthcare for the homeless programming. So that's really what our mayor's, one of the mayor's asks for this legislative session. When she talked about the private land, our county planning department also brought together stakeholders to accept.
Randy, I don't mean to cut you off, but we're running out of time, but I promise we're going to do a second show on this. We would like to thank our guests, Scott Morishige, Governor Ige's coordinator on homelessness, Randy Menino from Hope Services Hawaii, Lieutenant Governor Josh Green, and Sam Millington, Director of Partners in Care. If your call didn't make it on the air, you can still contact the Talkback line. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday for more of the conversation.